Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to be talking about diet, food, what are the choices to nourish our body? How did we get this body in the first place? And is our ego driving our choices? Society, social media, maybe the next best thing that comes down the pike? Or how should we really take care of the body that we've been given? Who gave us this body? Where did it come from? How do we know what is best for us when we really have no guidebook? Truly, the thing is we're really talking about what is the source of our energy, our soul, and our body, where did it come from? We're going to be talking today about spirituality and the connection to food, the connection to God. Who gave us this body? How can we start to listen to messages when there's something out there and we say, I can't find myself through the weeds? Well, maybe just start reading and find yourself through the words. What are the words? They could be your Bible. They could be your diet books. It could be something that someone else may say, and it's all about knowing what is the message for you. Today, my guest is Sid Nodder. Her book is The Plan A Diet, combining whole food, plant-based nutrition with the timeless wisdom of Scripture. Sid, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Dr. Jeanette. Thank you so much for having me on today.
Oh, you're so welcome. Don't you think, Sid, that sometimes we say this body never came with an instruction book and we're kind of just winging it, right?
That's true. We have to figure things out as we go.
Yeah, I think that the idea of when we were given the body so long ago, we say we are really a facet of our parents or whatever is going on in history at the time, don't you think?
Yes, definitely culture plays a big role in our diet choices.
And, you know, I look back, it's interesting. I look back on history in the 50s, and I grew up in Pennsylvania. It was out in the mountains, and we had farmers, and that's how we ate. But then I look at it, and I have come to other cities that I've lived over the decades, and people eat so differently. And don't you think, what was your experience with that? Have you found that through history and places you've lived, that things have changed?
They certainly have. I remember my own diet growing up in a small town in Illinois, and we ate all sorts of hot dogs and things. But today's fast food and processed food has grown exponentially since when I grew up in the 50s and 60s. There's much more fast food available, processed food in the grocery stores. And I think for convenience and taste and cheap pricing, you know, those types of foods have gained in popularity.
You know, I think back on that, you know, on history, let's go back again to that same era. And really, we were coming out of the Depression. We were coming out of not having things, you know, of post-war. People were very much on survival mode. And then all of a sudden, people started getting good jobs, getting homes, and they were able to eat more. Don't you think that was the beginning of, was your status of having more food in the home related to more money as we started to feel we had more power?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think you're right. I remember my mom and dad operated a pizza kitchen, and my mom would make the dough and the pizza sauce and even the sausage from scratch back in those days,
right?
Which is far different than the pizza kitchens today. But yes, we. I remember the cheese truck being a part of our life, where the government would have a big cheese truck come to town, and everybody could go get free cheese at one point.
Yeah, I remember that. You know, we used to have those. It was Land O'Lakes, and it was white, and it was a big block. You know, and I always remembered in all of my, you know, everyone had one in their home. And it was just something that we always grew up on. But I think also, too, the idea is that people felt that if they could afford more food, then they were richer in the eyes of others.
I think you're right. Even though my parents were avid gardeners, places like the A&W root beer stand had opened up, and things were starting to creep up, you know, into society with more fast food. Nothing like what we have today, of course. But, yeah, we had the fresh produce from my parents' garden, but we also had a lot of things coming our way, like microwave or TV dinners. Microwaves
right.
weren't on the scene yet, but we had the TV dinners and the aluminum
yeah.
trays.
Yeah. Well, you know what was interesting, too, is that I also noted is that people would start having other friends over. In other words, like when you didn't have money and you didn't have a lot of food, you pretty much ate at home. In solitude, because that was limited, you know. But then when people start to have more money, they start to have parties. And I remember this growing up in the 70s. There was always a party, and there'd be tons of food and tons of people because you could afford it, you know. And there was a lot of it all the time. And what was so different is that now we even flip it over onto now, and people are saying they want to eat better, but you know, I can't remember the last time I went to a, quote, party where there was tons of food, you know, like they would do it like every weekend or every Wednesday or every Friday and Sunday. You know, maybe three times a week we would have these huge gala kind of things. And I think it really has changed and gone full circle, this question of food and what is it all about.
Yes, I remember my parents hosting card parties all the time, too. With ample food and drinks.
Yeah. You know, I mean, we used to have, my aunt had a pool, and there would always be tons of food all the time. And I don't mean just a little. I mean, like, normally what you would eat for a family of six in a week, you would see 10 times that on the thing on a Sunday afternoon. So it was really an incredible amount. I think what we've really done, though, is really taken food and said, is it showing wealth? Is it showing success? And can you see how we just can't get enough of it? So what is something that we're trying to satiate inside of ourselves?
Yes, I read a book called The Pleasure Trap a few years ago, which talks about how we're wired to seek pleasure with the least amount of effort, and perhaps that plays into it as well.
You know, I think it's interesting when you talk about it as, you know, people in the 50s were very thin. I remember being very thin, you know, and I think really people started to get heavier. I think it was around 1980s that really started, and now it's kind of not only taken off, it's been exponential kind of, you know, increments. But we look at it, people are more unhappy now. People feel more distant from the religion. They're distant from their source. And they're not really, it's almost like they're wandering in the desert, but they're still, you know, scraping and taking everything they can to try to fix themselves. What are your thoughts on that?
I totally agree. In fact, I mentioned that in the book, that I've often wondered when that shifting point occurred in society, when we just stopped really caring as much about our physical health and just consumed everything that came our way. I think you're right that oftentimes we're seeking something and we're trying to fill that void with the food that's available.
Right. It's like, what are you seeking for? And I think we become more distant from religion. I know for myself, in the 70s when I used to play the organ in the Catholic Church, you know, everybody was at church all the time. The city I lived in only had one Catholic church and everybody was there. Now you look around, I live in New Orleans now, and two-thirds of the churches have closed. So we look at it and we say, where is God to fit into this paradigm anymore? And have we become disconnected from how our what our source is and how we got here in the first place.
Yeah, and I think that big disconnect is why many people of faith are struggling with obesity and diet-related illnesses at the same rate as the general population. So I agree that there's that disconnect between viewing our diet as spiritual in some type of way, because how we feed our bodies certainly does reflect if we view our bodies as we're managers of our bodies and not owners of our bodies. That plays into the whole paradigm of how we care for the body.
Right. And also, too, if you're looking to do a mission in life, if you're looking to have a soul path, if you're looking to play out and do something that you're supposed to be here for, if you're not able to take care of the vessel in the first place, it doesn't work. It's almost like saying, I've got to have a job to go to every day, but I refuse to take care of my car on the weekends to check the oil and the gas and give it a wash. You know, it's almost, are you in defiance of the mission and you're going to just plug away with ego, or are you going to understand the mission and take the cues along the way to be able to support the mission?
Right. That is totally true. I think so often we are not thinking about the purpose of our body, which when you think about it, in my view, is the most intimate gift we've been given, is our physical body, because it's how we pray with God and talk to God, and we use it to communicate with Him. And, you know, when we feel something is laid on our hearts or our spirits, that's God communicating to us through our body. So, yes, it's important to keep that body in tip-top shape, not only to serve Him and the purposes that He has for us.
Right, because if the purpose is to be human, the human vessel is the body form. In other words, we can go around preaching spirituality all we want, but if we don't take care of our body, then how can we stay in the human form to successfully do the mission? You know, I think a lot of times we see there's a lot of I call it paradigm outliers, where spirituality, people will claim that this is their profession, they're going to do it all the time, and they're out professing God, and they feel that they need to be meager, they need to not care for self, because God will care for self, but they go about and they abuse their bodies in that way, instead of understanding that maybe God has given them food, which is nourishment for them to care for their self. You know, we sometimes get the messages construed, do you think?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do agree. Physical health and spirituality are two separate spheres when really they're not. And like you said, God has given us all the nutritious food that we need for good health. But oftentimes we're not aware of it and we simply don't choose it even when we are aware.
Let's talk about the idea of, now that we've gotten ourselves into these paradigm ruts, you know, in history, we see where things, oh, okay, I understand it played out. Now what? The answer is choice, change. Two words that many people say, oh, I just don't want to even go there. Choice is to the left, change is to the right. And we say, oh, but those are two different things. Choice is free will. Change is something that's put upon me. Is it really that easy or that difficult?
Well, if you view something as difficult going into it, it will be difficult. But if you think of it as just different, like I'm going to choose healthy foods to nourish my body, and yes, there's going to be a period of adjustment and a learning curve, but it's a worthwhile endeavor, and so I'm going to do it. And so if you go into choosing something with the right attitude, change will occur quicker and at a more easily attainable pace. I see what you're saying is that they're two different things, but choice
right.
does lead to change. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think almost I try to change or shape-shift the words. I almost like to say sometimes we're going to dance with whatever's presented. So if we go to the store and we say, okay, I'm here to buy some food today, we say, That looks new. I don't know what that is. Let's be curious and inquisitive and get excited about something new. So you'd pick up an item that you've never had before. Then what you do is you learn how to dance with it. And then you learn what it tells you and how it makes you feel. That is such a lighter way of saying, this is what you have to do because for these outcomes. You know, if we look sometimes and we say, can we dance with something new for the experience? Sometimes I think people will say, oh, I'm going to go on that train. But when we say, you're going to do this so you won't have this disease or that, or because you have to be around 10 more years, and they're like, ugh. You know, it's like this mind-driven outcome that you're expecting. And then what happens is that outcome sometimes doesn't show up. That outcome doesn't change in the way in which you perceive it. And you say, well, so what's the problem now? Did I perceive it wrong? Did I get the wrong message? Or perhaps I wasn't, quote, good enough. And then we go off on a whole other exit of the highway. Don't you think?
Yes. Yep. I do think that. There's so many mental barriers to making change. And I agree that just the word change can often incite negativity in many people.
Right.
So to think of it more as a transformation, and really, what is your motivator for wanting to improve your health? You know, what is motivating you to do that? That's a key factor in overcoming what I call, there's 12 barriers I list in the book, 12 barriers to change. And most of them are just the way we perceive things, or sometimes it's the avoidance of pain. If you perceive that something's going to be too hard, you know, you would rather not even undergo that short period of adjustment.
Right.
Things like that.
I think also to the ideas that are our perceptions, our memories, or the stories we tell ourselves, or those stories that we collect, are we truly just not eating our way through life that way and making our choices that way? In other words, we choose something because, oh, that smells good. It reminds me of my grandmother or the old store, and we eat it. Mm-hmm. So we've now eaten a memory. Or we turn around and we say, well, that's something that I believe it will prevent heart disease. So then we take it and we say that's an outcome irregardless. And then we put it in our body and we wonder why our stomach doesn't absorb it, or we don't feel better, or we say, oh my gosh, it just didn't resonate with me. We have to welcome in our food and dance with it versus being able to just put it in like it's got a job on its own to perform, but we have no say in it. Don't you think?
Yeah, and I think the overall dietary pattern has to be considered too. Because just making maybe one or two small changes might not result in great benefit immediately. So I always encourage my clients to make as many adjustments to their diet as they can comfortably at the start, so that when they do see positive outcomes, they're more motivated to stick with the healthy eating.
And I think also to the idea of what type foods are the best. I think we've really gotten into of recent about plants and whole foods, and definitely that is the way to go. But if you look at it, the vegetarians who we've all poo-pooed for many of the decades through life, and we've said, oh, no, it's faster, it's quicker, it's easier. Doesn't it smell good? Look, it looks pretty. And we took all of the other ways. I think the idea of what is safe, what has the best amount of nutrition in it, what is in its closest to pristine form, is really what we're talking about adding to our diets. Because really, if you look at it, let's take a great superfood, and we turn around and we put it in our machine and we pulse the you-know-what out of it for 20 minutes, well, it's no longer a superfood. If we turn around and take that same superfood and we put it in the microwave, it's no longer the same superfood. We turn around and we make it today, and we say we've made it now for a week. It's no longer a superfood. So I think the idea is, how can we eat things in their pristine form to benefit our body the best? And that's whole foods and plants. Yes?
Mm-hmm. Yep, the further we get away from the natural food, the more processed it becomes and the more refined it becomes and the less healthy it becomes as well.
Yeah, I think the idea sometimes we say, oh, but our parents used to do it this way. I mean, I remember canning. I don't know if you remember that or not, but, you know, every the end of the season, we would go to the farmer's market and they would sell a bushel of tomatoes for like maybe $2 or a bushel of peppers for $2. And my, you know, mother and my aunts would bring them home and they would make things like chili sauce or canned peaches. We would have those through the winter. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking back on that, and I said, is that truly the best? And it actually was, because we didn't get those foods at all in the winter. So at that time, that was really something to really help nourish us. Now we mm-hmm. look in 2019, you can get blueberries in January. You can turn around and have, you know, sweet potatoes all year long, and they're still, quote, considered fresh. Because there is so much transportation, there is so much more growing, and things are moving around the planet more often, whereas in the past they never did. So I think sometimes people say, I never grew up eating that, and now you want me to? And I think that's a definite basis of history playing out again. They never ate it because it wasn't available. And now we're saying, oh, it's available. Would you like to try it? So irregardless of the decade of life you're in, you'll say, yeah, I'd love to try it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I never really thought about the availability of food back in my childhood because my parents also did canning and jarring. And But you're right. Today we have availability of any food pretty much at any time. Now a lot of those foods may not be in their original state anymore. But there's nothing wrong with eating frozen fruits and vegetables that are out of season because they're still quite healthy as well.
Right. And it does make a difference when you're able to say how many fresh foods can you put into your diet, because it's all about bioavailability and bioabsorption. If you turn around and things are put into your body and you say, oh, but I put it in there, you have to think, is the food alive or is it already dead before you put it in there? And are you putting it into your body in the best form to have it absorbed? So many times mm-hmm. people will say, oh, yeah, I did my broccoli thing. You know, it was in my TV dinner or it was in the thing I got from the grocery store and they put it in the microwave and it's been sitting on their counter for the whole time. Well, that broccoli has been totally useless since the day that it was cut, you know, because mm-hmm. everything along that pathway is null and void. So I think to know also, too, when you're eating better and you're starting to put whole foods and plants into your diet, it's truly about knowing the path with which it came. And I think when we know the path with which it came, you and I have both shared our stories from the past. It didn't have to go very far. It was the butcher down the street, the dairy around the corner, or the farmer's market, you know. And now some of those are still available to us, and those are the ones you want to gravitate to versus finding it from other sources, yes? Yeah, it does make a difference. You know, I think when people say, what is the color on your plate? You know, here in New Orleans, it's quite often their plates are pretty much brown and white. Most things are deep fried. It's a rice of some sort. I've even gone out with people that have said, I want a burger with no salad. And I looked at them, you know, and I said, oh, why don't you want the salad? I'll take it. They said, no, I don't want the lettuce, tomato, and onion that comes on the hamburger. And I went, oh, wow, you know. And I think the idea of people have so many different views about food, and we say, how can we incorporate those back to be able to share with others all of our stories on how we might eat, yes?
Mm-hmm. Yes, there certainly is many views, especially when it comes to carbohydrates these days. A lot of people won't eat a potato anymore because it's a carbohydrate. But there's nothing wrong with eating a sweet potato. Yeah, you know, we just have to separate the carbohydrates from the refined carbohydrates, which are the bad carbs, to the complex carbs, which are the good carbs for us. So there is a lot of misconception out there about what to eat and what's healthy, and I think that's part of the reason why some people just throw in the towel and decide not to make any change at all, because there's a lot of conflicting information.
And I think also, too, the idea that when you go to your doctor and he says, I don't know about your diet, go figure it out, and he'll hand you a paper, there really are very few support systems for what is healthy, what is not, and how that might nourish your body from out of the state that you got yourself into. I think the responsibility, the recognition, and the identification of what is something you should eat and what is something that I'm not so sure about, putting it out there, really no one has taken on that responsibility. Truly up to the patient and the person themselves to be able to say, I know for me this does not work, I know for me this does work, and be able to stand up and be responsible versus pushing it off on the doctor, pushing it off on society, pushing it off on healthcare, whatever, and saying, oh, but they didn't tell me that was a part of my, you know, disease or how I got into this process. Don't you think so many times people will say, my disease has nothing to do with what I'm eating, leave me alone?
Oh, definitely. And many mainstream doctors are not trained in nutrition as well, so they're not advising their patients to change their diet. I was encouraged recently because I live south of Chicago, and there's a huge medical system here, and I listened to a cardiologist give a lecture on plant-based eating, and I was very inspired to know that there are now 19 cardiologists in this group here in Chicago that are promoting eating a plant-based diet to reverse heart disease. So it's starting to catch on. There's even groups out there now that are teaching physicians more about the benefits of plant-based eating and the difference it can make in their clients' health.
Right. And but also, yes, too, the idea of naturopathic physicians, of which I am, we are all about nature and all about that type of eating, and we've been professing this for eons, it seems. And I think it's time when you say, you know, oh, my doctor doesn't understand it, you can always seek out a naturopathic physician in your area. They're all across the U.S. and other countries, and be able to say maybe they have a different idea, and you get a whole different perspective. Because I think the idea of we are part of nature and how can we incorporate ourselves as such versus thinking we are the human beings and we are in this little silo, you know, and we're just going to live our life devoid of other things. When you start to bring yourself into incorporation with healing, you're able to heal your own body with the nature around you. Yes?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, I always advise my clients to remember that they are their number one health practitioner, that they are responsible to seek out information and to take the best steps for themselves, as you were saying, for their own health, to do their due diligence and look at the research and put those things into practice, which will help them. Without having the doctor prescribe it, you need to be able to do those things for yourself.
Right. Well, Sid, it was such a pleasure to talk to you today about this. Many times people say, I'm going to push it off, I'm going to push it on someone else, or I'm just going to walk away. And I think those are the things that are really getting people into the idea that we are now living so much longer in the year 2019. We're living up to hundreds and even over 100 these days. And we're saying, how can we take care of our bodies to be able to make that trek? So I think your book, The Plan A Diet, is definitely something that if you're looking to make a change or start something new, it's a great reference.
Thank you. Yes, that's my hope for this book, is that it will inspire people to consider more their diet, because there are big disconnects between diet and disease, and many people aren't putting those two things together, but they truly are related.
Right. Well, Sid, can you share with the listeners how to find out more information about you? That would be wonderful.
Sure. The best thing to do would be to go to my website, which is sidnotter.com. And that is spelled CYDNOTTER.com.
Well, Sid, it was such a pleasure to have you with us today. I think every time we share the message and we share that there are other ways, people will say, let's tune up our ears, let's pay attention, and maybe dance with that journey, yes?
Yes.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Dr. Jeanette. I appreciate it.
If you'd like to find out more information about Sid Natter, and again, the book is The Plan A Diet, please do click on the link on the bottom of today's show page, and you go directly to her website. It truly is about saying, something's off, something's not working right, I think I need to shape-shift, change, or dance in a whole other paradigm, because something's up, and this is not working for me. Try something out, try something new, check out the book. It talks about plant-based diets. Also talks about what a whole food is and how this body that we've been given is really given to us by God. And it truly is about how are we able to nourish ourselves to be able to complete the journey of our soul's existence. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Till tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.